In Matthew chapter 14, verse 13, we read these words. Now, when Jesus heard about John, there we go, we'll let you guys catch up there. We got all the different better slides. Now, when Jesus heard about John, and we're talking about John the Baptist here, he withdrew from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself. And when the people heard of this, they followed him on foot from the cities. Now, that's one little verse in between a couple of different stories that have just happened. What the news that Jesus just received was that John the Baptist, one of his relatives, John who baptized Jesus, John who was the herald that came before Jesus' ministry to say, hey, there's one coming greater than I am. He was killed for his faith. He was killed because he stood up for God's principles. He was put to death for not backing down in the face of suffering or persecution. So what does Jesus do? It says he withdraws. He withdraws. Now, it doesn't say that he quit. He withdrew. He didn't throw the towel in. He didn't give up. He withdrew. This was heavy emotional information for Jesus. And so he withdrew, and that's natural. There is a big difference between seeking shelter in a time of mourning or seeking peace in the time of where you're in need of healing and completely throwing in the towel and quitting or giving up. We've talked in this series through the book of Hebrews about how the Hebrews writer stresses that Jesus was fully human. He was fully human. He was the great high priest made fully human so he could better relate to us, so he could understand what we go through, so that he would understand what it feels like to live as a human in a fallen world. Did the death of John affect Jesus emotionally? Absolutely. Both because he was God, God feels emotions, and also because he was human, humans feel emotions also. But did it change Jesus' direction? Absolutely not. Jesus continued in faith. He continued in obedience. See, after Jesus tries to get away and get a little time alone between him and his father, after receiving this news that impacted him so, we see a couple of Jesus' most impressive miracles. Jesus tried to get away from the people, but the people followed him. And so he had compassion on them, and so he taught them because he had an opportunity for ministry occur there. And then when it was getting late, he fed them. He fed over 5,000 of them. And some of you are going, oh, this was the setting for the famous feeding of the 5,000. This is what happened in Jesus' life right before that amazing, that huge miracle, his largest miracle when it comes to numbers of people. Then Jesus, after the feeding of the 5,000, he sent the disciples on ahead of him across the lake in a boat. Then he sent the crowds away, and then Jesus returned to his initial objective there. He got some time alone. He went up a mountain and spent some time alone with his father, praying. By this time, when Jesus was done, the boat was pretty far out on the lake and apparently was struggling in rough waters. And we see yet another very impressive miracle that happens. In the middle of the night, somewhere between 3 and 6 a.m., and I kind of imagine that it happens something like this, that the disciple who was on watch at that time, rough waters, they're trying to keep it on course and make sure everything's all right, make sure they don't wreck, and it's between 3 and 6 a.m., so the rest of the disciples were probably asleep. And he's looking, and he's extra aware, extra alert because of the condition of the weather. And I can just see him just turn white. And his eyes pop open and his jaw drop just. And then gently tap the closest disciple body to him. And he had no clue who it was. Peter, John, Andrew, whoever. He just taps real gently. And then he taps less gently. And I can imagine that disciple, you know, waking up, Nathaniel, what are you doing? You know, whoever that disciple was on watch at that time of the night. What are you doing? It's not my turn. I just did a shift. I'm sleeping till morning. And then I could just see him. No words. Just, and this isn't scripture. It's just how I envision this part here. I could just see him just pointing. White, eyes popped open, jaw dropped. Just, and I can see that disciple repeat the same cycle. Just white, eyes open, jaw drops. and he gently taps the next disciple, and then not so gently. And I could see that happening, like a set of dominoes falling across the boat until all 12 of the disciples are wide-eyed and terrified, white with fear. "It's a ghost," they cried out. But Jesus immediately went to set their hearts at ease. He said, "Don't be afraid, it is I." Peter then says, "If it's really you, Lord, then tell me to come out to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." And many of us know this story. Peter had faith enough to step out of the boat, and he actually walked on the water, eyes fixed on Jesus, walking on the water. And then he looked to the rough waters around him and lost sight of Jesus. And he was filled with fear again, but this time it wasn't fear over a ghostly image. This time it was fear over his surroundings, over the situation that he was in, over the realities that existed around him in the physical world, and he began to sink. And he said, "Lord, save me." And Jesus reached out his hand. "You of little," what? "Faith. Why did you doubt?" You of little faith, why did you doubt? And so when they got back into the boat, the rough waters stilled, the wind calmed down, and we're told that they worshiped Jesus. You know, oftentimes when we study those stories, we study them as little individual stories because they're amazing stories. I mean, you get into the death of John the Baptist, and that whole thing has a whole story to it that we didn't even touch on. We get the feeding of the 5,000. That's a huge story. That's a lot of things in there, a lot of application we can take from that. We go to Jesus walking on the water, and in between there, the extra lesson of Jesus trying to get alone and get some recovery time, and how that's, there's a lot of truth to that as humans that we need that time. And there's so many lessons in that, but I want us to step back and take a bird's eye view of this as we continue in our study of Hebrews. There's a lot here, a lot when we step back and we see Jesus receiving the information of John the Baptist and this being an emotional impact to him, and he wants to get alone, he wants to get away. He has a ministry opportunity that comes up, and he takes the time for that, but then when that's over, he returns to finding some time alone. Sends the disciples over out on their own, walks on water and the whole Peter situation, and then he says, "You of faith," you know, or where's your faith? Why did you doubt? Why did you doubt? Peter was walking out on rough waters, turbulent waters. And I'm connecting all of these things into this amazing example that Jesus was giving to the disciples and 2,000 years later giving to us. Because I can imagine the disciples were wondering, how turbulent are the waters going to get now that John the Baptist has been beheaded? How difficult is faith going to be now that this has started? What does this mean for us? I mean, we're Jesus's 12. We're the close disciples. If this is what happened to John, how turbulent are the waters going to get? I believe that even in their traveling over there, they would have been talking about the feeding of the 5,000. They also would have been talking about John the Baptist being beheaded while Jesus is away on the mountain. And they're going down or sailing across the lake, and discussing these things and thinking, man, how rough is it going to get? What is this thing we've gotten ourselves into? This is a great message of encouragement from Jesus to the disciples. Things are about to get rough. There's going to be rough waters ahead. When you get tired and weary from the struggle, find time to get away and recharge with God. Yes, there'll be ministry opportunities that might interrupt that, take time for that, and have compassion, but definitely return to some alone time with God. Don't sacrifice that completely, because you need that. And whatever you do, don't lose faith. Don't be shaken by the circumstances, the situation around you. When the waters are turbulent, when the waves are rough, when the winds are strong, don't look down. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Let's write this down. I will suffer. I will endure. I will be confident. I will be richly rewarded. See, after Jesus' resurrection and his ascension into heaven, the church began to grow and it spread. And over some 20 to 40 years, the church expanded. It expanded through Pisidia, through Pamphylia, through Mysia, through Macedonia, and even over into Rome. And Christians were regularly exposed to persecution and suffering for their faith. What started with John the Baptist and continued through Jesus continued for his followers. And so the Hebrews writer writes in verse 32 of chapter 10, as we pick up where we left off last week, "But remember the former days when, after being enlightened, you endured great conflict of sufferings, partly being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. For you showed sympathy to the prisoners and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better," everyone say better. There's that word again. "You have a better possession and a lasting one. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward." Your confidence has a consequence. Your confidence has a consequence. There's a great reward for it. "For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised." You know, we don't connect with this level of suffering because we don't experience it here. When we read in the Bible about people being, you know, Stephen being stoned to death, of John being beheaded, and we find out through history of Peter being crucified upside down because he didn't want to be crucified right side up, because he didn't want to be crucified the same way Jesus was, because he wasn't worthy. And we hear of these things. We hear of people like J. Henry in foreign countries and Salonique and the difficulties he has. And we hear about Safa. And we hear those crazy stories and we think, you know what? I can't relate. So when we read passages like this, I think sometimes we check out a little bit. I think we check out because we say, you know what? That's like a level 8 or a 9 suffering. And really, I'm just in a 1 or a 2 in comparison. But when you look at things and we take it into perspective, people in those countries, people in the early church suffering persecution at levels 8 and 9, the Hebrews writer is writing to them and encouraging them, guys, stick with it. Hang on to it. Be confident. Don't lose your faith. You will suffer. Be confident. Hang on to it because there's a great reward coming. He had to say that because there were people departing from the faith because of the suffering. There were people saying, you know what, nuh-uh, not me. It's okay. I was kind of iffy at it at the beginning anyway. I'm not, you know. And so we had people falling away from the faith. But you know what, in America, at just a level 1 or 2, we still have Christians falling away from the faith because of that persecution. And whereas we look at it on a scale and we say, you know what, we can't relate to that, The result is something we can relate to. We still have people falling away. And when we look at it, when we step back and we look at it and we say, wow, John the Baptist got his head chopped off and served on a silver platter. And my persecution is that I got ostracized at work because I didn't laugh at the dirty joke at lunch. And we think, well, that's not really suffering, because that's suffering. But you know, those level 1s, level 2s, those result in people leaving the faith. And the encouragement does relate to us. It does pour over to us. You know, I've learned that when we look at pain objectively, you can see that. You can say, okay, this is a beheading, and this is, you know, ostracization at work. I think I just made up a word. So you guys can look that up later. But we look at that objectively and we say, you know what, they're worlds apart. But in my experience with pain, emotional, physical, psychological pain, pain is pain. Pain hurts. Suffering is suffering. I've gotten a paper cut before, I think we all have. And I've torn ligaments in my ankle. Both hurt. If you were to say which one hurt more, I'd have to say, well, the ligaments definitely hurt more, but I tell you what, when I get that paper cut, I still wince. I still wince and go, oh, that hurts. That smarts. When in comparison, really, that's nothing compared to some of the pain I've experienced physically. But pain really, it's relative. You will suffer. You will. Even if you don't see it as a level 8 or 9, if it's just a one or two, you will suffer for your faith. It is inevitable. And let me tell you, church, from the encouragement right here in Hebrews chapter 10, you will endure. You must endure. You have to endure. You have to have confidence in your faith, in your Lord. Don't throw your faith away just because of rough waters, just because of difficult times, just because something shakes your faith. A one or a two can knock someone completely out of the kingdom if you let it. Don't let it. Don't look down. Don't look down and look at the rough waters. Don't look down and look at the waves. Don't look down and look at the physical reality. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Keep your head up. Keep your eyes up. And focus on Him. And hold on to your faith no matter what happens. Why? Because there's a consequence for our faith. There's a consequence for our confidence. And that is that we will be greatly rewarded. Say this with me. Say it after me. I will suffer. I will endure. I will be confident. I will be richly rewarded. And then say this after me. I will live by faith. And write that down. That's our next note there in your bulletin. I will live by faith. I'm going to go on and read this passage here, verses 38 and 39. I want you guys to go on and write that down. It was going to be up on the screen, but I'm just giving PowerPoint notification there. Verse 38 says, "But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him." The Hebrews writer comments on that Old Testament passage. He says, "But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of our soul." And that's in your bulletin. So that's the next little note in your bulletin. You don't have notes to take on it, but I want you to take that home to go hand in hand with this proclamation that you're making this morning. I will live by faith. We're not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of our soul. Very similar word. We will live by faith. We will not shrink back. And then the Hebrews writer turns a page into chapter 11 and he defines faith. He said, this is what faith is. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. And this is also in your bulletin. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. And then from this point, the author goes on and he launches into a huge, it's just an amazing list of examples of men and women who have lived by faith. And a lot of people call this the Hall of Faith, so we can have that up there just to give you guys a reference in your bulletin to go back and read that. Due to time constraints and on a Sunday morning, we're not going to be able to do it. I would love to sit here and just read that whole chapter because it gets me hyped up and it leads right into chapter 12 so well. So I want you to, if you listen to this online, then what you could do is you could just pause it right here. Just hit the pause button. Go and open your Bible and read Hebrews 11 and read it with gusto. I mean, just read it with excitement and just crescendo to the very end, the last verse, and then unpause and catch me back up here at this point in the sermon. When we turn the page into chapter 12, the Hebrews writer talks about all of these men and women that lived by faith, that did amazing things by faith. He says, therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance, anything that would hinder us, and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. I think we sung a little bit about that this morning. Who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Say this with me. Actually, repeat it after me. I will run the race with perseverance. Guys are a little reluctant on that one. It's going to write that down. Take that home. Put it in your back pocket. Carry it with you wherever you go. and be reminded of verses 1 through 3 of chapter 12 of Hebrews. I am inspired and encouraged by the faith of others. Let's go and write that down. When we read the chapter 11 in Hebrews, and you go back and you read that sometime this week, and I challenge you to do that. Carve out some time. In fact, you want to start your day, here's another prescription from Dr. Delafield, all right? You want to start your day awesome? You read Hebrews 11 and then verses 1 through 3 of chapter 12 every morning this week, and you see what it does for your day. You see what that does for your soul, for preserving your soul to walk and live by faith. Because we are inspired and we are encouraged by the faith of others. We are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. When I read this, I kind of get this stadium mentality of either like a football stadium back in their time, maybe a gladiator stadium. And I just picture, you know, Paul Brown Field just packed. Packed, sellout crowd. And we're the ones on the field. And you know who's in the crowd? Moses. And Abraham. And Jacob. And Isaiah. Not my son, but the prophet. And all of those that went before us, all those that weren't even in the Bible. And we're also surrounded by all of those on the field, aren't we? All of those that are presently living. So we are inspired and we are encouraged by the faith of others. Another thing I grab out of this verses 1 through 3 is that I actively and consistently lose things that would cause me to lose. Let's write that down. I'm going to unpack that just a little bit. That I actively and consciously, did I say constantly? Consciously. It means you got to think about it. It means you got to do, it's a mental exercise. I'm going to lose the things that would cause me to lose. The Hebrews writer said we need to lay aside. We need to throw away anything that would encumber us. Anything that would hinder us. Anything that would hold us back. He says, and the sin that so easily entangles us. You just got to get rid of it. You got to lose that which would cause you to lose. You have to lose things that would cause me to lose. And you have to do that now. It has to be an active process. It happens now, it happens 5 minutes from now, it happens 10 minutes from now, it happens from now until the time when Jesus comes back or in the time when I pass away and I enter into heaven. It's an active process of consciously saying, I'm going to lose what could cause me to lose. Why are long distance runners so skinny? Some of you guys are out there like, duh, because they run all the time. That's got something to do with it. But really the reason why they're skinny is because long distance runners, they look at food differently than regular people look at food. If they look at a cookie, they look at a cookie differently than the way I look at a cookie. I look at a cookie and I think, you want to see me do a magic trick? I can perform a magic trick of that whole plate. But a runner looks at that plate of cookies and they say, you know what? I'm going to have to carry that cookie every step of every stride the next time I run, whether it's practice, whether it's fun, or whether it's a competition, a marathon. That's their thinking on that. And they think about that. You know, talk to a runner. They think about that, about everything they eat, everything they put in their body. They think, all right, if this goes in and I have to carry it, that's going to be something I carry every step of every stride. When you look at a male swimmer, I'll be nice, I'll just say male. But they will shave everything. I mean, they will shave their chest. They'll shave their legs. I shaved my ankles when I would tape them, but I could not see shaving my whole leg. They shave their legs, their chest, their back if they need it. They shave their head. Why? Because if they can knock off 1/100th or 1/1000th of a second, it's worth it to them. It's worth it to them to get the best time they can get from going one side of the pool to the other side of the pool and back. To shave off everything. And that's the idea that the Hebrews writer is saying. He's like, get rid of anything that would cause you to lose the race. We're in a race. Get rid of it. If it's holding you back, if you're thinking, okay, this cookie, and I'm not talking about a cookie this time. I'm talking about spiritual things. I'm talking about things in your life. If this cookie is something I want to eat right now, and it's baggage, spiritual baggage, emotional baggage, mental baggage that's going to hold me back from my race in the kingdom, it's not worth it. It's not worth the cookie. anything that would hold us back, the sin that so easily entangles, just like a swimmer, shave it off. No matter how small it may seem, no matter how little it may be, anything you can lose that would cause you to lose the race, get rid of it. It's that black and white. It's that simple, church. Let's reread that so we can get that fresh in our heads. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. And I'm going to go on and read the verses in between. I've just got a ellipses there. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy sat before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and says, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Let's write this down. I will guard against growing weary and losing heart by fixing my eyes on Jesus. By fixing my eyes on Jesus. The author tells us to fix our eyes on Jesus so that we will not lose heart, so that we will not grow weary. And I am immediately reminded of Peter, and that's the whole reason I brought that up in the beginning. Walking on the water, exemplifying for all of us the success of what walking by faith looks like. When the Hebrews writer quotes Old Testament, he says, my righteous will live by faith. Peter was exemplifying that while walking on the water. But he only walked on the water when he had his eyes fixed on Jesus. Fix your eyes on Jesus so that you don't lose heart, so you won't grow weary. When Peter dropped his eyes, his heart dropped. His faith dropped. So fix your eyes on Jesus and your heart won't drop. Fix your eyes on Jesus and you won't grow weary. Don't lose heart. Keep your heart up because you keep your eyes up. Repeat after me. I will suffer. I will endure. I will be confident. I will be richly rewarded. I will live by faith. I will run the race with perseverance. Come on, crescendo with me. I will be inspired and encouraged by the faith of others. I will lose things that would cause me to lose the race. I will fix my eyes on Jesus.